This is CliffCentral.com. Womandla on CliffCentral.com.
It's Womandla. It's Wednesday. That's one of those songs that makes me so happy. And I think on a rainy day like it is today here in Joburg, with all of the... I'm on Cliff Central. I'm allowed to say, with all the shit happening in the world, with all the craziness happening from America to Syria to downtown Pretoria, that is a song that I think we all, you know, we need a little love in our lives. We need a little bit of sunshine. We need a little bit of fun. So Freshly Ground is definitely the way that I wanted to start this show. Because the other way I could have started this show was, life is like a box of chocolates. I think everybody's favorite quote out of Forrest Gump, one of the movies that in recent memory has made a huge impact in the lives of many people and kind of taking us one way down a path of understanding autism and what autism is about and what autistic people, how autistic people view the world and live. I have a very special guest with me this morning, Rosanna, and she just said, Rebek. And I was like, what? Rebek. Very special person in the studio today. She is the founder and one of the educators at a center called CARE, C-A-R-E, which is the Center for, remind me, Autism?
Autism Research and Education.
Autism Research and Education. Why are we talking about autism today? Because I believe in synchronicity, and for about 2 weeks now, everywhere, every newspaper, every Huffington Post newsletter coming at me, Forbes magazine, was telling me about autism and autism awareness. And when I spoke to Rosanna, she said, yes, that's because it's almost Autism Awareness Day. Last week, Sunday, actually, was the date. And I always drive past their old home, which used to be in Dunkeld/Hyde Park. Always drove past the center and always saw this thing that says CARE. And it's such a cute board that they had there. But now you've moved to a new home in Orange Grove.
Yes.
And they are a school for autistic kids. And I thought, all right, we're going to have this conversation then. We're going to have this conversation because I think there's a lot of misinformation out in the world. There's a lot of misconception about what autism is about, how you get autism, and more importantly, how you live with an autistic family member. And Rosanna has very graciously agreed to come during her school holidays and spend this morning chatting with me about her work. Welcome, Rosanna.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking the initiative. So you're the founder of the school.
That's correct.
Why? Why would you even, you don't even have kids. Most people that become part of a cause, especially causes that are related to children, tend to be people that have been affected by an illness or by a particular way of living. And so have far more awareness, and that's why they get into it. How do you, gorgeous, young, beautiful, and not shackled down by a kid, become the mother of so many kids?
I started the school in 2011. I've always been fascinated by late onset disorders like autism. It only starts around 18 months when you see the first signs. But I think autism changed my life. Education changed my life, apologies. So that's why I've always wanted to have a group of professionals under one roof and working with children. The good thing is, not being a mother of a child or a mother of a child with special needs, is that I've opened the school for all children. So I cater to all children. It's for anyone and everyone with autism. Autism's not selective. It doesn't only apply to certain races or certain religions or anything. It affects all children all over the world.
Or a certain gender.
An interesting point is that autism affects a disproportionate number of boys to girls, with a ratio of 4-1. So it is more prevalent in boys. We've got 40 learners at the school, and 32 of them are boys and only 8 girls.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is, so let's just talk about the condition. Let's talk about what exactly is autism? Because when I think about my understanding of autism, it ranges
yes.
from one end of the spectrum of Rain Man,
yes.
right? Where all I see is Dustin Hoffman, and and I think, wow, this is a lot to deal with. And then on the other end, you're dealing with a Forrest Gump type person,
right.
or somebody that I have in my life, a very dear family friend of ours, who all my life is the most amazing person, but incredibly autistic. And I have this person in my life, and so my understanding of autism is very personal and very specific.
Right.
So what exactly is autism?
Autism is the fastest growing developmental disability in the world, and the signs of autism can be evident from when an infant is 6 months old. However, the disability is typically detected around the 18 months old age. There are several warning signs that might include the presence of autism. They're not limited to eye contact, a lack of reciprocal smiling, which is very difficult for parents. You smile at your baby and the baby doesn't smile back at you. An inability to recognize familiar individuals, which would also be difficult for family members of children with autism, or the cousin or the auntie, where the child actually doesn't recognize them. And communication milestones may also be delayed. It's important to note that autism is a behaviorally manifested condition. And
okay,
that
whoa.
It's a behavioral condition.
So, okay. And this is the thing for me, right, is this is something that very young kids, so from about 6 months, you can kind of tell that there's
very early signs, but you would need to be a professional in the field to be able to detect it at that young age.
But most kids are normally diagnosed around
18 months to 2 years.
Around 2 years is
right.
when most parents will come into the realization.
Start to see changes or a regression or...
Okay, so now you have to explain to me, like a six-year-old, about the behaviors that are typical of autistic children or sufferers?
So the four main areas that are affected by autism are social interaction, behavior, communication, and sensory functioning. And the difficult, so for a six-year-old, where you would expect them to be able to hold a conversation, tell you about their day, they're limited to 2 to 3 word phrases in sentences, or 1 or 2 sentences, but it's more... They're not going to tell you, like, they're not going to comment on a story or run up to their parents and say, I had a great day today and I did a few writing things and I played with this one or played with that one. What you also see very evident is the lack of peer interaction or social interaction. They don't get the nuances of social skills. They don't develop incidentally like they do with neurotypical learners. So we have to teach them how to play. Play is a very important learning. You learn through play. Children learn through play. And they just don't develop play skills. They don't develop imaginative play. They don't pretend that they are fairy or that they're a pirate or they're a fireman. They don't understand the concept. We need to teach them functional play, symbolic play, which is so important in learners who are developing.
And what other things can a parent look out for that says, oh, you know, this type of behavior maybe, because again, I think for a lot of people who don't have anybody as a reference point for autism, what we tend to look for is we look for examples that we've seen in media. So we kind of think, oh, very typically, you know, repeated words, for instance, is a big thing with autistic kids.
Yeah, it's called echolalia. So a lot of our learners will repeat what you say. You know, we tend to say to our kids, say hello, mm-hmm. say this, say that. If there's a nice, you know, say jump, say hop, say car. And then they won't just say the word. They'll repeat exactly what you said. They'll say hello, say car. Although echolalia over time is more indicative of communicative intent. So it's actually not a negative. We do look at it as a positive, because when there's that echolalia, they are able to produce language. They do have a receptive, which is the understanding of language. Even though they're repeating it verbatim with what you're saying, it still indicates that there's communicative intent, which is always what we're looking for, because of those communication milestones that are typically delayed or non-existent in learners on the autism spectrum.
Speaking of autism spectrum, so I've often heard that term, that it's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum disorder.
And what does that exactly mean? It's a spectrum disorder. Does that mean that everybody has the same symptoms or nobody has the same symptoms?
There's a saying that says you can know 1,000 autistic children, but you still only know one. And I think that really sums it up and what it means by a spectrum disorder. We're looking at scattered developmental profiles with learners on the autism spectrum. They may have really good skills in certain areas and not good skills in the other areas, and you see the difficulties or the challenges. So because of that scattered developmental profile, CARE is an educational facility as well as offering specialized therapeutic services, where we are a registered school within the Gauteng Board of Education, which allows us to use the CAPS curriculum but pull from the curriculum so that we can address the different areas. So each learner will have an individual educational development plan so that we can cater to the specific needs of each child. One child may be really good at grade 3 maths, but they're still at a grade RL early intervention stage in play, which we need to be able to fill the gaps and bring that scattered developmental profile into something more uniform.
And what about parents? You know, as a mother myself, and I think for a lot of parents, it's very, very hard to come to terms with having a child that's got any form of disorder. But a behavioral and learning disorder is a double whammy, because it also says to the parent that this person is going to be dependent on you for their whole life.
Learners with autism can absolutely live independent lives. They do benefit from intervention, occupational therapy, speech therapy. Another treatment method is applied behavioral analysis, which is a one-on-one intervention. We offer a classroom-based approach at CARE because it's more simulated to a typical schooling. We are trying to get these learners integrate them back into traditional schooling. With the behavioral condition, it is very difficult, absolutely, because you can't take a pill for it, and autism is a lifelong condition. So taking the medical component out of it brings a big grey area for families and creates a lot of anxiety. What we do see now is receiving a diagnosis of autism, which absolutely does shatter your world. And I'll tell you a beautiful story on explaining that. But with the diagnosis, the two things you get out of it is access to services, which there's our facility and a couple of other facilities in Johannesburg. And then it's for medical aid funding or any access to finance in order to finance, because it is very expensive. They need intensive intervention. Occupational therapy, speech therapy, even ABA are costly to families. A lot of our medical aids do support autism, recognizing it as a lifelong condition, so that there are available funds to these families. And then you've got the schooling component, which we offer. So the kids do come for typical school. They go to school, they follow the national the CAPS curriculum. So they're going to school. There's a beautiful story called Welcome to Holland, and I think I tell most of my families all the time, and we've got it framed.
Tell me the story.
It's really beautiful. I mean, I don't have it on me to read it, but I know most of it verbatim, and we've got it framed at the entrance of our school because it really is important. And what it says is when you have a baby, you make all these plans and you're going to Italy because all your friends are in Italy and that's where you want to go because that's where everybody else is. And you get on the plane and unfortunately the pilot announces over the intercom that he says, and welcome to Holland. You know, we've just landed in Holland. And you can't believe it because that's not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be going to Italy. Why Holland now? Yet you need to stay in Holland and you need to learn a new language and buy a whole lot new more guidebooks and find the more beautiful things that you can appreciate about Holland, because Holland's where you have to stay. And all your friends will still be in Italy and you'll still be upset that you're not in Italy. But when you start to appreciate all the beautiful things about Holland, Italy doesn't feel as important anymore, because this is where you are now. And it really is a beautiful, and it does sum it up. And when I read that story for the first time, there was nothing that was going to stop me in opening a school for learners on the autism spectrum. Because it really does sum up special needs in a beautiful way.
That's incredible. That's incredible, because that is, wow. It actually blows my mind, because that is, I suppose, the thing about parenting. Is everything is so unexpected. And yet, because of our personal experiences, we have a particular expectation of
and
how things are supposed to be and a plan of how things are supposed to be. And for the parents, what kind of advice do you give parents who arrive at this diagnosis and then come to you looking for help? What are the first steps, I suppose, in getting the right kind of support for a child with on the autism spectrum?
So families will either phone, they'll either have been to a developmental pediatrician already. As an occupational therapist, which is my profession, and we're a team of OTs and speech therapists and specialist educators at the centre, we are not allowed to diagnose autism. So either they come to me first and we'll then make the appointment for a developmental pediatrician in order to get a formal diagnosis, or a pediatric neurologist or a child psychiatrist. The next step would be a screening process to determine suitability for the centre, meaning would this learner or child benefit from the intervention that we offer. We offer an intensive occupational therapy and speech therapy at CARE, as well as specialist educators who are following the CAPS curriculum in an adapted perspective on that individual development plan, each child that I spoke about earlier. And then I try and I don't have a child with special needs, and I think over the 6 years that the school's been open, it's been better. I think it might have been more difficult for parents if I had a child with special needs or a child with autism, because potentially I would have created the centre to cater to my child, and all other children needed to fit in to my child's journey. So that's been really great for parents to, and they really are fascinated by me, like you were earlier, why did I open the school? Education's changed my life. I'm an occupational therapist as well as a business degree, and it really has paved the way for me in creating the centre, as well as running the centre and having a team of health professionals and specialist educators under one roof. So that it's a one-stop shop. They're getting the education, so they're still following what their neurotypical learners would be doing from an education perspective, and then receiving the intensive therapy on top of that, all under one roof, taking away the difficulty for parents who need to, in this economic climate, both parents need to work full time most of the time, and they don't need to drop and fetch, and children are not pulled out of class to go to therapy, so there's no stigma. There's a lot of fluidity through the centre. We're a transdisciplinary team, so everybody's helping, everybody knows everybody's child. Speech therapists are training occupational therapists. We're doing a transfer of skills, which is really nice, as well as the specialist educators get to use therapeutic principles in the classroom. So it's a constant therapy-rich environment, as well as a language-rich environment, which autistic learners really benefit from. What I do also try and help parents with is when they get the diagnosis, is to try and focus on using the diagnosis only for access to services, whether CARE is the right facility or we need to refer to a more beneficial facility for the child, and then for any access to funding from any medical facilities or whatever else they may have. And then to look at the child specifically. What does their child need? After doing a comprehensive evaluation and assessment from an occupational therapy, speech therapy, and education-based, we're able to develop a plan going forward. What are we going to do the next six steps? What are we going to focus on? The diagnosis is just a heading. It's just an umbrella term. It doesn't tell you anything about the child. And again, stressing to parents that you can know 1,000 autistic children, but you still only know one. So you know yours. You're the advocate for your child. You need to listen to your gut. If you feel that this is the right place, if you see the intervention working, but to also communicate with, we're a big team. There are 35 of us in the team. To not try, there are lots of fad things that come up over the internet and do this and do that. And some things may have benefits, some may not. Not everything works for every child. Should we remove gluten and casein, which is dairy, from all children's diet? Sugar. What happens at birthday parties? What happens when they're going to their cousins or their friends or their brother or sisters, they can't have the cake, they can't have the ice cream, they can't have the sweets. It becomes really difficult for the child. And how much, it's an elastic band. How much do we stretch, and when do we decide that we're going to pull back and give the child the freedom to develop?
And typically from your experience, the kinds of questions that first-time parents who've just received that diagnosis, the kinds of questions that they ask themselves, and the kinds of questions that they ask caregivers or potential caregivers, what have been the most insightful questions for you that you've kind of gone, I wish every parent asked that question?
Wow, I don't think there's any question I wish they would ask. I think it's more the not that I wish they wouldn't ask, but the typical questions asked are, and they're not the ones that I wish them to ask, because unfortunately we never know until we see how the child benefits from the intervention or whatever interventions are put in place, is if we're looking at a nonverbal learner, will my child talk? And when the child's 2.5, 3 years of age, early intervention between ages from 2.5 even till 7, we're looking at the early intervention ages. The possibility that they will talk is high, but nobody knows. Will my child go to university? Will my child ever wear a school uniform in grade one? I've put my child's name down at a private school, which is for neurotypical learners. Will they go there with their brother or sister? Will they? We don't know. And I think that's the most. So there are never any questions I really want them to ask. It's more the questions that I hope that we give them enough comfort and support in knowing that every child is different, every child on the autism spectrum is different, and giving them everything that you can and as intensive as possible, because there is typical research that proves that intensive occupational therapy and speech therapy is highly beneficial for learners on the autism spectrum, and just giving the child the chance, giving the organization like care even the chance, you know, or wherever the child's placed, rather than constantly trying to find something better or looking for that grass is greener approach, mm-hmm. where you may see something, but then there'll be something else missing. And we really are encouraging with parents, should we do the gluten casein free diet? Try it for 3 months. Let's check it. Let's keep me going. Tell me what's happening. We'll watch at school what's happening. You'll tell me what's happening at home. We open from 7 to 5, and a lot of our learners do stay with us for the full day. So we really do have a lot of information to give to the parents, and then marrying it together with the parent being the advocate for the child.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of information that you give to the parents, and in the internet age, there is a lot of information available.
There is.
A lot of which is suspect. A lot of which is, like, as you say, bad science, you know. One of the things that for a very long time, and it's been quiet, I suppose, for the past 2 years or so, Jim Carrey and his ex-wife, they have an autistic child. And for a good 5 years, all we ever heard was Jim Carrey talking about autism, talking about how vaccines created the autism, how his child reacted to the vaccines, how we need greener vaccines, and that created a huge spin. I think for a lot of new parents who are typically very neurotic about everything to do with their babies. And over time, you know, one of the things that we did see was some parents who actually made the decision not to vaccinate their children, and then a resurgence of things like measles because the vaccinations went. So, myths. How does one get autism? Or do you get autism? Or is it something you're born with? Is it something that's in your family? Is it genes? What are the causes?
There's a 5% genetic predisposition, and then unfortunately 95% is environmental causes, which again creates a lot of anxiety for parents.
What does that mean?
I don't know. What does it mean? Absolutely. Environmentally, things have changed. There's nothing to pinpoint. There is a slightly larger genetic, I think, you know, we've always said there's a 5% genetic predisposition. It might be 10% now, which is still minimal in relation to 80 or 90% being environmental causes for the reason anyone would get autism. We do believe that if you predispose, you predispose. So whether the myth with the MMR, which is the vaccination that happens around that 18 months to 2 years of age, that's when it's generally administered. And that's when the signs of autism rear their head,
and it has been debunked. I think the thing about it is that a lot of studies have been done, and there's absolutely no link between what is MMR, mumps and rubella, right? So there is definitely no link that has been found. It is simply just the correlation of the age of when most children get diagnosed and when this vaccine is actually administered.
Right. I mean, there's no conclusive research. I'm not sure if we could say there's absolutely no direct link, because it's still and constantly under investigation. But it is around the time that the MMR is administered when the signs of autism will show. There's a regression or there's a lack of further development in a child around the ages of 18 months to 2 years of age, when we're looking for certain signs of development and they're not there. I've also, you know, throughout the 6 years that CARE's been open, hundreds of kids that we've seen, some have been vaccinated and some haven't been vaccinated, yet they're still on the autism spectrum and have the formal diagnosis. So it's a tough one to answer to parents. You know, they have their road to health card, they bring it in. This is when I did the MMR, this is when I saw the signs. So for some, there may be a linkage. It might have brought it on. We do believe that if you're predisposed, you're predisposed. So it's going to come out. It's going to start showing the signs, and the features of autism will start showing around that, around those ages.
So autism shows up quite early on in the toddler years, as it were, because that's where the biggest growth of development milestones are observed. Is there, or are there any cases where it's only diagnosed much later, you know, later than being a toddler, 6, 7, 10 years maybe? Can one still be diagnosed with autism as late as that?
Generally not. Unfortunately, when we do see learners that are, get a diagnosis around the ages of 6, 7, and 10 would be really late, is did these families have access to services? Were they able to find a developmental pediatrician or a pediatric neurologist or a child psychiatrist, the three disciplines that are able to diagnose? They may have seen their pediatrician early on when the child was 4, the child wasn't talking yet, and they kind of leave it at, well, I was a late talker, mom was a late talker, or granny was a late talker, so they leave it. And then access to services isn't so readily available depending where you are in the world. There are limited facilities, and we'll talk about just South Africa, and we have many families from neighboring African countries that come to care because of the limited facilities. But there are limited facilities in Durban, Cape Town, as well as Johannesburg. It's just being able, do you have the access to the services? It would be very difficult to miss the signs of or the features of autism already by 6, 7. Not all learners show all the typical signs. And generally, the main indicator now is stereotypical repetitive behaviors, the flapping of the hands, the banging of the head, the sensory seeking, where the communication...
What do you mean, sensory seeking?
So a lot of our learners, it's called sensory integration, where being able to process information from your senses, the 5 typical senses, eyes, ears, as we know, and then there are 2 other systems, and you've got the proprioceptive system, which is knowing where your body is in space, being able to... having to stand right up against someone. It's not socially appropriate to stand in the queue at Woolworths or Pick and Pay, for example, and stand right up against somebody because the body's craving that sensory feedback, like a deep pressure hug or a massage, for example. Now, a lot of our learners require so much more feedback. You see the learner that constantly runs up and down, the child that will jump up and down on the trampoline for hours, removing the child from the trampoline because they need to come down and sit for dinner or even go to sleep or leave the house is terrible. There's going to be a tantrum. How long does that tantrum last for? What do we use to calm the child down? What motivates the child? Because their sensory system is just so disordered. I generally say to parents, imagine 5 o'clock New York traffic in your brain. And ants crawling all over your body because they can't...
Just saying that makes my body crawl.
Yeah, and they can't understand what's going on inside their body. And then they have the lack of words. They're unable to communicate receptively to understand, but their expressive language is where the main deficit is. And then they can't tell you what's going on. Mm. So they're typically known as runners. Mm. You know, shopping centers are difficult.
See, it happens around here. People, so my sensory integration is not suffer. Thank you, Siam. Thank you. So, as a parent then, who's noticing this, because I do think that sometimes it's also, because it's so difficult, sometimes it's also a lot of denial that says, oh, you know, he's just an overactive child.
Yeah.
Or... What also happens with a lot of kids is then they get put on medication to calm them down, as it were. And so some of this might be missed because of that. And the denial, you know, where you're not quite ready to accept that there's something more, there's something bigger that one needs to intervene on here.
Yeah.
What are the dangers of waiting too long? Waiting too long to get a proper diagnosis and put interventions in place?
The dangers would be that scattered developmental profile would just get bigger and bigger, and the deficits in the areas would get larger and larger. There are families that are in denial, and I mean, I can't blame them. I can't imagine what it feels like, and I try my best every day. So they'd stay in the mainstream or the neurotypical mainstream nursery school, or even get into maybe grade R, and then all those signs just come crashing down. The school can't cope. So generally in your play school years, they'll play alongside others. If the group of kids, 15 or 16 kids, which learners on the autism spectrum would struggle with 16 or 17 kids in a class. Our class sizes are 6 to 8 kids in a class with a child to adult ratio of 2 to 1. So you can imagine that versus 16 or 17 kids, one teacher, one helper at a typical day school or for neurotypical learners. So the child will play along or tend to play on their own, which is what we see with learners on the spectrum. And the school will just allow it. One being just a lack of knowledge, not knowing what to do, not knowing how to tell the parents that as much as they try and encourage their child to participate in whatever's taking place on a typical day at a nursery school, the child refuses or they can't get the child to participate. So it's easier to just leave the child, let them follow their own lead, and carry on with the rest of the kids, because there's only 2 adults. They've got 17 other kids to deal with. And if they do make it into grade R or 000, which is not that common, everything starts crashing down then, because they really won't be able to cope in a learning environment like that. The curriculum wouldn't be adapted, and they'd be taught like any other learner. You need to sink or swim, and that's where the big problem comes in. Receiving, you know, getting a learner at 6, 7 years of age, 10, who've never received any formal intervention or intensive intervention like speech therapy, occupational therapy, even ABA, applied behavioral analysis, and then with none of that, and they're already 6 or 7, the difficulties are so much bigger. A lot of their habits have become conditioned. The stereotypical repetitive behaviors are more pronounced, and they interfere with learning. If the child's constantly flapping their hands because they need it, then what? How do we get them to hold a pencil? How will they sit at the table for even 2 minutes? And that's what would be happening at a high support setting like ours. It's such a celebration for a learner who's very sensory seeking to sit at a table even for 2 to 3 minutes and do a 4-piece puzzle and then get a positive reinforcement for that behavior and allow to run for the next 5 minutes and then back to the table. Versus imagine in a neurotypical school, you need to sit for 2 to 3 hours until first break. Mm. And that's where the difficulty comes in, and that's when they're calling the parents in. If that happens, it's in select cases and also lack of services.
Roseanne, when you are a parent and you have support in place, you've been able to access places like him, going into adulthood, how easy is it for kids on the spectrum to integrate, you know, as they become teenagers, as they become young adults, as they even become fully grown adults? How easy is it to integrate into society in the norm that it is in?
It's not easy, but it absolutely can happen. And learners with autism can live independently and look after themselves and even work. They can work. And they've got restricted interests, but they do have interests. And if it's something that's functional, one of their interests, then we can absolutely foster that skill, being it computers, numbers, reading, words. And I've seen some exceptional skills in learners coming through the center, and even learners that we still have today. I've got a little girl, she's 8 years of age. She reads better than me, I'm telling you. She can absolutely read fluently, but she won't have a spontaneous conversation with you. She won't run and tell you how her day was. But if you give her a journal, she'll read it word for word with no errors. So learners on the spectrum, again, it's back to that 1,000 autistic children, you still only know one. Some will live independent lives. Some may need more support going through into their teenage and adult years. a lot of our learners, about 25% of our learners year on year, integrate back into traditional schooling, remedial schooling. The mainstream setting doesn't support it. It's not the child. It's the system doesn't support it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a worldwide phenomenon. It's not only in South Africa that our educational system doesn't support integration or inclusion of learners with higher or more support needs than your typical neurotypical learner. So getting them into a remedial setting is unbelievable, and we see that year on year, which is incredible. Will every learner? No. Or maybe. You never know. It just depends on the consistency of the intervention and the response of the child to the intervention. The unfortunate reality with autism, and it's not in all learners on the spectrum, there is an intellectual impairment coupled with the diagnosis, and it depends on the severity of that. So there is a lower IQ, but not in every learner. But we do always need to take that into account. So, and we have a number of unbelievable remedial schools in Johannesburg, but they also have limited facilities and limited places. And then you get on the waiting list and you can't get in. Mm. Doing a formal assessment of a very expensive. Can you afford it? How long will it take? Do we wait 2 to 3 years on the waiting list? What happens then? Mm. So we are a registered school from grade R to grade 12, which is unbelievable.
To grade 12. Wow, well done.
My oldest learner's 14, but they're following a more functional program. Teaching them on how to live independently, cooking skills, gardening skills, meal preparation, making a bed, dressing, undressing, all the things that don't develop incidentally for our learners.
And the journey of becoming a registered school could not have been easy. I mean, you...
That's right.
Is that what that laugh is about?
That's right. It wasn't too difficult. I mean, there were formal documents that they required, and there was a list of things that we needed to submit. But the Gauteng Board of Education does support us. Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. There are a number. We registered as an independent LSEN school or special needs school. Mm-hmm. Access to the CAPS curriculum, and they are very supportive in the fact that we are able to pull from aspects of the curriculum in order to develop an individual educational development plan specific to each child versus, so we're an ungraded system at CARE. Our classes are actually blue, yellow, they're in colors. There's a three-year age range, which is acceptable in a special needs school with small 6 to 8 kids in a class and 2 teaching assistants in each class. So that ratio of 2 to 1 is there. And some learners are doing grade 1 numeracy, some learners are doing grade R numeracy, some learners are still in early intervention numeracy. So even though it's a numeracy lesson, everyone's doing different things. Mm-hmm. You teach new skills in a group, and then once you've mastered the skill, you work on that skill independently. So our classrooms are set up very differently to a typical mainstream setting.
So you have to tell me how this idea came to you. To set up this type of, because I've never heard of an institution like that. So how did this idea come to you, and what is it that you're hoping to achieve with it?
I think I mentioned earlier that I've always wanted, that education did change my life. So I knew, I qualified as an occupational therapist at the end of 98, and I worked for a couple of years, and then I got into corporate. And coming to around the January of 2011, there was this burning desire to get back into the field and have a team of health professionals under one roof. I also always felt as a child when I was at school, I wanted to be taught in the way I wanted to be taught. So if I created a school or a center that taught in the way that I felt would be the most beneficial, or how I would have even done well, and I did very well, but even better, then how amazing would that be? And I started doing some research. It was always going to be a late onset disorder. There was a chance it was going to be a school for schizophrenics, which could have been also very interesting for the show today. I was starting to hear the buzzword of autism, and someone close to a friend of mine whose son got the diagnosis of autism, and it got the ball rolling, and I started making all these phone calls, phoning all the developmental pediatricians, other special needs schools in Johannesburg, even Cape Town, Durban, and finding out, was there a need for an autism-specific facility? And the response was unbelievable. If I made 100 calls, I think 98 of them were positive. And people supported me all over, from top developmental pediatricians, Professor Lorna Jacklin, to the National Director of Autism South Africa, Jill Stacey. Everybody met with me. And the ball started rolling, and I left corporate on the 18th of April, and our doors opened on the 1st of June.
Wow.
We had a small center then. We were in Rosebank in Worcester Road. And within the year, we already moved to our old home in Dunkeld on Bompas Road because we had too many learners and we needed to expand our facilities. And we were always renting. So the vision was for care to go on for years and years and years and to be a center of excellence and enhance potential, change lives. And that is our vision. That's my mission for forever. And the amazing thing is after 5.5 years, we're running into our sixth birthday now on the 1st of June of 17. We've just bought a property, which has been unbelievable. We are the proud owners of the land.
Magnificent.
And we did it used to be for 60 years, it was a Jewish day school called Yiddish Folk. And we took that over. So the facilities were already in place. It was unbelievable. And we did a couple of tweaks and we put in a new swimming pool because they never had and our learners swim every Friday with two special needs teachers and they go horse riding and they do yoga and they do drumming and they do music therapy and soccer on site. Everything's on site versus a neurotypical learner where moms are dropping and fetching and dropping and fetching to all these different extramurals.
I'm thinking right now, this is a very lonely school.
It really is a state-of-the-art, world-class facility. Everything that I've ever wanted, I put it into the center because I now own it. Owning it and being able to for it to be mine for the rest of our lives. You know, renting, and we always enhanced everybody else's property because each center was unbelievable. This really is a world-class facility with the state-of-the-art equipment, an amazing team. There are 35 of us, and it's not called the Rosanna Center. It's called the Care Center because it's the team. It really is the team, and I've got an incredible support system that we all work together. And some people say morning boss and some people, whatever they call me, it really is a flat structure. We are a team and everybody's working towards the same goal. So care wouldn't be care without the team, without our amazing parents, and without the support from the community.
Do you feel fulfilled when you wake up in the morning and go to school? Does it touch that place in your heart?
Always. And I think I have amazing friends and they've all had kids already. And I hope to have kids of my own one day.
Really?
And I would love to. And I'm very involved in their children's lives. So it gives me that every day. I do see these kids as my own. And I think if any of our parents are listening, they know how much I love their kids and how I do treat them like my own. And like they absolutely are my own. So I do get that fulfillment every single day because it isn't easy. I do want my own kids. So I have 40 kids and I've had hundreds over the years. And we're a family of care. The staff are family and everybody is so like territorial on their class. And there's three adults in the class with the 6 to 8 kids and it's their class and it's their kids. And, you know, sometimes, you know, everybody's like just really integrated and all for the same purpose and goal, which is unbelievable.
And your biggest lesson about autism over the past couple of years of really specializing in a very focused field, what has your biggest lesson been about the spectrum, about autism?
It's that it's lifelong, number one, and that it's a spectrum disorder. And unfortunately or fortunately, there are leaps in development and then there are a number of backward steps in regression. And just understanding on how to accept that pull and pull back and the jump forward and the jump back, being a spectrum disorder, each day is different and never knowing what's coming next. And there's those amazing days where the mom fetches and they've never said anything and they come running in and they say, "Mommy." And that's just unbelievable. But for somebody else, it doesn't happen as fast, or it may never happen, or we just never know. So it's just not taking life for granted and understand and being able to encourage parents and support parents in that their child is unique and their child is special and their child is Holland and Holland is beautiful. And just to celebrate the small milestones, even the littlest things we need to celebrate. Because mm-hmm. you never know whether they're going to be there tomorrow, or they're going to be bigger, or they're not going to be there at all. Because mm-hmm. that's generally the typical nature of the disorder.
And your hope for the school going forward?
For CARE to be a world-class facility, to continue to enhance potential, change lives, and be there forever and ever and ever, and cater to as many children as we can on the autism spectrum.
So the new facility that you have, how many kids can you cater to? You've got 40 kids on the premises at the moment?
Correct. Mm-hmm. We can cater to 48 learners.
48 learners. So you still have space
yes.
for learners. And how do people get hold of you?
They can call me on our landline, which is 011-485-0335. They're also welcome to call me on my mobile on 082-909-0054 or visit our website, the www.thecarecentre.co.za. There is an online screening form there, and I will receive the email through the website and make contact with the parents.
Speaking of the screening form, what kind of questions are on that screening form? And I ask this because a lot of parents are listening to the show and they're thinking, I wonder if, you know, what are the things that I should be looking out for here? You know, and I believe as a parent, there's always a gut sense. As a mother, you kind of feel it. There's something that's not just quite touching sides, and it makes you feel a little uneasy.
Right.
What are those questions that are on that screening form, or just some of the top five questions that a parent should be asking themselves that says, maybe I need to get to developmental pediatrician or neuro?
A pediatric neurologist or a child psychiatrist.
Okay, so what are those questions?
If you're looking for eye contact, does the child respond to their name when they called? Have you had a hearing test? Can we rule out the fact that maybe there's any impairment in hearing for the reason why there's a major delay in communication or not responding? Has there been a regression in their development, especially on the communication side? Did they say a couple of words? Were they babbling? Did the one or two words start mommy, daddy, juice, which are generally the first few words that start ball, jump? And then did they just disappear? Or has it been a consistent progression or consistent pattern of silence or making noises, which isn't good because it's, again, indicative of communicative intent, but all they do is make noises all the time, or consistent crying, never being able to soothe the child. We look at, they're called the prerequisites for language development, and we're looking at joint attention, turn-taking. Remember peekaboo. We still play it, even if it's not our own baby, and you take somebody else's baby and you're visiting, and it's the first thing you do.
And
you
when
smile
you
at the baby.
See a child in the mall or
absolutely.
In the restaurant.
They smile, you smile at them, they smile back at you. You play peekaboo, there's responsiveness there. And those are the signs to look out for in the early stages. When you're starting to get that uneasy, queasy feeling that maybe there's something different, my child's different. And also comparing to other children of the same age. Some parents have other kids. A lot of our families have only one child because after having the child with a learner on the spectrum, their decision to have a second child is difficult.
Because children are so exhausting as it is. To have like two or three, I can imagine that it makes it even more of a burden. And just about finances. I know you spoke about the fact that medical aids are very supportive, but what kind of finances are parents looking at for an education at a facility like yours?
So you're looking, I mean, our school fees are pretty similar to a mainstream setting or a remedial setting. We do open at 7 to 5, and we all are specialists in the autism field. So you're looking at age dependent. If you're a learner from 18 months to 7 years of age, it's 6,600 rand a month for school fees. And then if you're a learner older than that, 7 to, you know, going up to grade 12, it's 7,500 for this year. The other component
with horse riding and stuff.
All extramurals are included in the fees. So they're doing horse riding. We've been taking our kids
to horse riding and stuff.
Yeah, to Nanda since 2011, and it's unbelievable with the same teacher, and they absolutely love it. Our learners just you know, mount the horse and ride. And we often get feedback from them that mainstream learners or neurotypical learners, they do also come and ride there, don't ride as well as our autistic learners. So they may not speak and they may not respond, but they get on these horses and it's just unbelievable. They follow the instructions because the receptive language is there. And there's a remarkable interaction going on between the child and the animal, which is just really phenomenal to see. So it's something that we'll always continue doing. So included is the horse riding, the yoga, the swimming, the drumming, the music therapy, and the soccer. And then there's the other component, which becomes difficult for parents, is the therapy fees, which are quite costly. But there is access to medical funding depending on what health insurance you have. And I think, you know, in our lives today, you would need to be on a medical aid. It is very difficult if you're not, for anything, even if you don't have a learner on the spectrum.
So there is an Autism South Africa website as well that you can go to, aut2know.co.za. If you're looking, if you're outside of the Joburg area and you're looking for more information, there's definitely help available. And I think that there is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming
Pleasure.
In and chatting with us, because I've learned so much. Because again, you know, we only know what we are exposed to, and what
Absolutely.
We're exposed to in the movies is so glamorized.
Yeah.
It's such a glamorous thing. You kind of think, you know, child on the autism spectrum, maybe I can take them gambling. another very popular idea around autism is on the other end of the spectrum is the savants. You know, you're just like, oh, my child could be like playing piano, like
absolutely,
or mathematical equation, like. And so it's really been interesting to hear all of the various things that are out there. And I think I commend you immensely for the work that you're doing. It's incredible that you've found that thing that turns you on so much and that it helps people around you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Your website again is The Care Center, T-E-R, right?
T-R-E.
T-R-E. I don't know.
Yeah.
.co.za. And you are in the Johannesburg region, but people can definitely get hold of you. And are you able to give them information about other places if they're outside of Joburg?
Yes.
Fantastic. Oh, Rosanna, thank you very much for coming in. Thank you for taking the morning out and coming in to keep it real with us here at Cliff Central and Womandla in particular. More power to you.
Pleasure.
I think this is what this show is about. It's about celebrating incredibly courageous women like you and the things that you do. And more importantly, it's about, you know, giving the information and knowing that there's help out there, that there are parents who have a similar or the same experience as you, and mummies, you don't have to be alone in this journey. There are definitely people out here to help. So thank you very much for coming to chat.
Thank you.
I'm Phumi Mashego and you've been tuned into Womandla. We're back again next week and hopefully the weather's better. Hopefully next week, you know, the weather and the climate of the world feels just a little bit better. And to sign out the show today, one of my favorites, we're dancing a little bit today. Stevie Wonder, Signed, Sealed, Delivered. CliffCentral.com.